So, welcome to our call on this beautiful December 4th day. And in Sedona, we got our first blanket of snow yesterday, so we feel very connected with all of you in the Northeast now, or in the mountain areas or the Northwest. We feel like we're in a common ecological community. I do really enjoy the South, and my husband especially is, he belongs in mango territory. But anyway, it is beautiful. And one of the loveliest things about Sedona is when it snows, it looks like gingerbread cookies dusted with powdered sugar because of these gorgeous red rocks. So there's a great view out the window, and there's a great view coming down from heaven. And I think that we all open up to this special view in the days before Christmas, even though it has become in some ways and places just almost offensively commercial. And we can get so caught up on obligations for giving when we'd really like to be giving from the heart. It's still totally above all of the maddening crowds and all of the enforced compulsions. There is a level of grace and peace that touches our heart, our soul, and our common shared spirit at this season. And it really goes back into our ancient days. I suppose in the Southern Hemisphere it would be just at the opposite end of the year, because they would have the ancient cultures there would have had a similar problem as the winter comes and as the sun moves to its furthest point from at least the point of Earth on which we live. It really doesn't move further away at all. It's just the Earth tilts over, and then where we live is further away from the sun. And on the 21st, well, it can vary. It can vary. It can be as early as the 20th or as late as the 23rd, but approximately the 21st or the 22nd. We reach our apex of turning away from the sun, and of course that's why we have our winter seasons and our shorter days, and I don't have to tell you the details on that. You're familiar with that, but it was the season in which people knew they needed to take care of each other. In the Native American culture, this was the season the huge Quonset huts were built, where multi-families would come together and literally use their body heat and their shared resources to survive the winter. The same was true of the Laplanders and the people in the far north regions of Europe and Russia. They would build their equivalent of the Quonset huts. They would live in a community, a communal sharing and protecting in order to survive this season in which the sun, in its apparency, moved away and brought in the cold north. But they would carefully observe the moment at which the earth and the sun would rejoin in their common union and celebrate that because of the hope and the promise that it would bring. And so long before we ever assigned Christmas to the birthday of Christ, there was that ancient, deeply rooted, magnificently natural celebration of the season. And I think it's in our DNA. I think it's in our cultural consciousness. I think it's in our whole group consciousness to care for one another, to reach out with charitable intentions and to celebrate, to be festive, and to join in our common resources for helping us not only suffer through and survive the hard times, but brace ourselves up for the coming spring. I think in many ways, the whole world has been going through a bit of a winter for maybe 3 or 4 years since we really took a look, maybe starting as far back as the tsunami in Indonesia, when we really took a look at the fact that we are one family. Our planet is challenged. We're now globally challenged in so many ways politically and in conflict, and then the economic challenge, and then the reality began to set in with you know, the particularities of how it affects our existence. We look around in the grocery stores and we find the quality of food is not as good, but the prices are much higher. And we're saying, what's going on? Well, this is kind of a winter season. And the cure in our human consciousness for the winter season is for us to join together in love, in common hope, common realizations that we have, maybe not one of us apart, but together we have what it takes to surmount any period of winter, whether it's the brief winter of the seasonal turn, or whether it's an extended winter of a geopolitical, financial turn of cycles, that we have the resources, because within us is the love and the grace of God that gives us the collective strength to find within the winter the deepening of our roots, and to prepare in the deepening of our roots the strength that will support spring when it comes, and to even share ideas literally around the fireplace. That's what people would do. They would share those ideas around the fires. What do we do for next year? Where do we go? Do we migrate? What do you think will happen with the crops and the seasons and the supply of animals migrating through? They would talk about all of these things around the fires. Well, that's a metaphor now, because we don't group in Quonset huts, but we do group collectively and spiritually in these times. And I look at, sometimes I open my email and look at the internet, and I find that people are using the internet and email for that kind of clustering together. But unfortunately, there's not as much positive as I'd like to see. There's a lot of spreading of fear and worry and upset and derogation of personality and distrust, and this is not what's going to build the fires of hope. This is not what's going to build, to bring us through. We need innovation, we need hope, we need sharing of ideas, we need insight, we need understanding. And so I just want to give you that as a thought for how we can build the true season of Christmas, that deep within the DNA and the consciousness exists all of humanity, even if they're not Christian. And even if they are Christian, it's still that heritage that caused the birthday of Jesus to be placed on or near the winter solstice. It's absolutely certain he was not born in the winter. All of the scriptures confirm it, and the new discoveries confirm the confirming. It's very clear he was born sometime in the early spring, and most likely around the time of the Passover, which was deeply significant to the life of Christ and to the life of his people, and to the promises God had made to the people for their redemption and for their salvation. And then, of course, he is crucified at the time of the Passover. So more than likely, more than likely the facts point to that. But you see, in the early days of Christianity, and for about 300 years, nobody really cared when he was born. They really didn't, because his physical birth was not of much importance to anybody. What they celebrated was his resurrection, his eternal birth into eternal life, which assured us of our eternal life and our ability to experience the ascension and the rebirth and the rejoining with our Creator. That's what they celebrated. And they probably were coincidentally celebrating it with his physical birth and just never mentioning that fact, because his physical birth was relatively insignificant compared to his triumphal rebirth. But what is etched deeply in our consciousness is the return of humanity to its Creator, and its Creator to humanity, that was symbolized by the sun and the earth turning back into a creative union, each with the other. And that's what's deeply, deeply part of our consciousness. And I know that even if you get depressed on the gray days and you're tired from shopping and you're about ready to throw your hands up with all the compulsory aspects of it and the artificial lights and the doodads and the Black Fridays, just let go of that. Let go of that. But find within your soul, find within your being the true meaning of Christmas. And in many ways, the blessing given every week is in that true meaning, because it's all about our reunion with God and the reunion we have with ourselves on the highest plane of our being. And I want to ask you a question, a really, really big question that we ask in the course that we just completed, and that is, how much are you allowing the higher levels of your being to nurture and replenish the physical, emotional, and mental levels of your being, from which then we find the resources and the energy to give into all of our societal connections, our social connections. So replenishment is, we think of the winter as being a time when the trees lose their leaves. Of course, the evergreen keep them, but most of them tend, at least around here, to turn copper, and that's because the combination of the cold and the fact that most of the sap has gone into the roots causes this copper tinging on everything. But they're not dead, they're just doing their work below the surface. And in many ways, see, that's what the winter represents, a time for replenishment, a time for just letting go of the cares of the world and readjusting our priorities to what's most important. So having said my little invocation and introduction to the day, I'd love to hear from any of you that want to share. It's so great to talk with you. And I see that Eva, you're on the line, and your line is open.
Hello, Glenda.
Hi.
I would like to ask for a special blessing for my husband, Charlie. He fell this morning. And
He fell?
He fell, yes.
Oh, no.
I was not here, and he was trying to put up Christmas lights on a ledge, which is on our stairway.
Oh,
and
dear.
He's been doing so well ever since last year, his hospitalization, when we thought we were losing him. And he has just had such a marvelous comeback and has been doing really well. And it's just, you know, kind of disappointing now with this setback. And he is bruised and hurting.
I know it must hurt right now. But we will pray that the hurts are superficial.
Yes.
And his recovery will be soon, if not instant.
I would love to see it instant. I did a blessing for him myself when I got home and did some energy work, and that relaxed him, and he looked better. after that was done. But he still has very much difficulty if he did try to get up to go to the bathroom and had a lot of difficulty with that.
Well, encourage him to be patient and tolerant with himself, knowing that at his age, even superficial injuries can be quite painful.
Yeah.
And because sometimes we can actually, and this goes for everybody, I hope you're listening to this, we can have superficial setbacks, superficial injuries. And we can wash them away with a good bath of tolerance, a little bit of TLC, and a little bit of forgiveness and understanding, and woof, poof, they're gone. But if we dwell on them and we begin to attach them to previous patterns or more deeply rooted patterns, then they can become something serious.
Yeah, this is what I have been learning in my own life, and even in this instant, I find myself reacting much differently than I used to years ago with problems with him, where I do feel confident that this will pass, of course, and it's just something that needs to be gone through, and
yeah.
I, of course, wish it to be very quickly.
Exactly. And just because it hurts really, really badly doesn't mean the roots go deep. I'll give you an analogy. When you hit your, I don't know why they call it the funny bone in your elbow, because there's nothing funny about it.
Right.
But you know how badly that hurts.
Yes.
But it just, like, goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some pains we have. Whether they're emotional, financial, interpersonal, or physical, that could just, I mean, it can lead us to scream like banging our thumb with a hammer. And we exercise every four-letter word we know. And it's ridiculous, because what we do when we do that is we invest it with more negative associations. So let's just, we will remember him in our prayers, and we just relieve all the negative associations that may go with this and send him our love and compassion that, yes, we know it hurts, and we hold you, we care for you until the hurt passes.
Thank you so much. I really
You're welcome.
That.
And I see Kenneth, I hope it's Kenneth. I have a just a caller ID here. You're on.
Hi, Glenda. This is Lindsay. I'm not Kenneth, but...
Hi, Lindsay.
Hi. You know, I took your Energy of Life and the Better Life class, and I, you know, it's so intense and rich, and I really enjoy that so much. And, of course, I'm still, you know, digesting all the information, but I, you know, as you know, I recently lost my puppy dog.
Yes.
And you know, during a time where I'm actually headed towards the unknown, losing my house, and, you know, some things that some people may fear, being alone and, you know, foreclosure and all that, that really hasn't been on the top of my list because I was grieving over my dog. But I'm getting around to this, but what is interesting is the whole thing is very, very fascinating because, you know, I've been working on my entanglements and my patterns throughout this whole thing because you've held that space for me to do that, and that's so incredibly powerful and important. And I realize that there's so many things about that class, but I think the thing that I used recently from there was working from the top to the bottom, and it's not that that's all I got from it. That's what I needed to know at that particular time. So I started doing that and working from the top, from the sphere, you know, from the spirit to the soul and throughout, which usually I would go the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
When I do my healing work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found that through that, I was able to really untangle myself from you know, previous times of where I, you know, was not in compliance with unity, where I was more towards separation and being, you know, a victim in all of this. Mm-hmm. And it really shifted today. I mean, this morning, huge. And so I'm headed out to the unknown. And, you know, for the past few years, it's been this kind of financial struggle, no TV, and which it really turned out that, boy, I felt so good after having no TV for a while. And it's very cleansing, too, in a way. Some people may think it's really bad and sad, but it's not. It's actually something to be grateful for because I am grateful. And it does feel like Christmas. It feels like Christmas, the pure Christmas, you know. And, you know, it's... it may not make sense to anybody, but it really, it's just such a cleansing feeling. And so anyway, I just want to share that and thank you. And, you know, I value your work so much, and I love you.
Thank you. I love you too. And thank you so much for sharing and for accepting the gift of simplicity that has been given you. You've been given a rare gift, and that is starting a whole new pattern in life.
Yes.
At a time when many people are hanging on to shreds and threads of things that they're attached to, which don't work anymore.
Oh, and they don't work. For me, they didn't work. And the interesting thing was, I do see humor in a lot of things in my life, and I feel I was living like the movie Groundhog Day for the past 7 years. You know, it was Groundhog Day every year it was Groundhog Day. Same thing. You know, totally Bill Murray all the way. And
right.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. Not to mention the Narnia I had in the backyard, but that's another story. So if I ever see another fantasy creature, you know, I used to think that was great. It was some real life, you know. So anyway.
Bye-bye.
I love you. I thank you. And I'm so happy.
I love you too. And I'm so sorry for your loss of your puppy.
Me too.
I know what it's like, and I'm sorry for all the other losses you've been through, but I'm extremely grateful that you're seeing and receiving the gift of simplicity and the gift of renewal, because renewal is what Christmas is truly about.
Yeah, and you're holding that space, and you are qualified to hold that space. And for some reason in life, we have to have a qualified mentor to make it stick. And yet, you know,
I appreciate that so much. I appreciate you too, and love you.
Yes, well,
right around the corner.
Thank you.
We have two other people, and I'm going to bring them. Lindsay, I'm sorry. Did you have something else to say?
Okay. I'm good.
Okay. For now, we have someone from area code 989. Is that you, Nancy?
Yeah, that is me, Glenda. Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I just would like to ask some special blessings for me because I was going to the chiropractor after the deer hit my vehicle, and this last time I went last week, he injured me for a completely different reason, a different area. I've been in horrendous pain for 3 days. It's like,
oh I'm so sorry, Nancy.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to have to take action on it. So I just needed some extra healing, extra blessings. Thank you.
You got it.
Yeah.
Thanks for speaking up.
Yeah.
We love you.
Thank you. I love you, too.
Okay. We have one other person. Actually, we've got two people now. The first one will take is from area code 206. It's a wireless caller. Let me. You're clear.
Hey, Glenda. It's Frank.
Hi, Frank.
I haven't had the opportunity to get on one of these calls in about a month because I've been busy once again, so I just first off want to say it's so nice to be back with you all.
Good to have you.
And also, I wanted to say that I can, from personal experience, confirm the whole TV thing. I've sort of been in a place of struggling with enjoying TV a bit too much for the past, probably two decades. And I've been watching Netflix streaming stuff the past, since halfway through last year. But about 2 days ago, I realized, I haven't really watched any TV for the past month at least, and I just went and canceled the Netflix, and I really don't miss TV at all. I think in the end it's really just a waste of time in my experience. You could be doing so much other stuff, whether it's reconnecting with family or spiritual practice or anything that actually it has some use. It's not just staring at something that really just eats time.
Well, Frank, I think the important thing is that you recognized what was right for you. And you responded to it. And you went for it. And I think for a lot of people, yes, television and movies have become an addiction. But I still think we have to allow that to be a personal choice. But in general, I think we're all coming very close to the point where we're done with vicarious experience. Many of our media, starting with movies, going back to the teens of the 20th century, were very, I really think that the comedies and the movies, more than anything else, helped to pull people through the Great Depression of the United States, especially the comedies. And it's partly because it gave us a sense of a larger community at times when most people couldn't travel. They couldn't travel widely, at least. You can only go so far in a Model T or a buckboard. Air travel was unheard of, except for the very rich. And telephones were just coming on board. And so people could connect and have a sense of community and see how other people lived. It gets us back to what I was talking about, the Quonset hut. Then as we moved into the TV era, starting in the 50s, it was available before then, but not widely. So into the 50s, then the big culture of television, again, brought our common realities to us so that we could share and unite through those common realities. And through many of those common realities, people did connect. And I think that it actually did help build connections. But we've come to a point right now where so many people live in their little cubicles, either watching a streaming movie or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, that virtual reality has become a substitute for the real thing. So I think you're right, Frank, that we're really on the pivotal edge of a reversal of value, where the value that came from these media that allowed us to collectively share are beginning to lose their importance and contribution to our life. So it's something that others of you might want to think about, but I really make no judgment on it because I've seen the good and the bad in just about everything, and it really comes down to how we use what is in our life and how much it allows us to discover and be the love that we are. But thank you, Frank, for being so attuned to yourself that you could instantly make that reversal, and that's really important. And thanks for joining us again. We're really, really glad to have you.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. We're glad to have someone from area code 707, and I think that's probably the last caller we will take.
Hi, Glenda. It's Cecilia. I'm at the beach, so I'm not sure if you can hear me.
I can. We can hear you perfectly.
Okay,
lucky
good.
Lucky little angel out there on the beach.
Yes, very, very sunny, beautiful. I'm so blessed. My question is about essential oils. I bought Christ Scent and the Copa Iba, and I just wanted some suggestions on how to use, especially the Christ Scent. Now I just kind of put it on my heart, sometimes in between, you know, my eyes, just above my, you know, the bridge of my nose. But I was wondering, I mean, can you put it in a diffuser?
Yes, actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Cecilia, because I have struggled with that through the years. Now, we do have a Christ Scent diffuser that's a reed diffuser. But if any of you have been to our website and you've seen the diffusers, you may have noticed that we only have four fragrances that we offer in the reed diffuser, and that's because most diffusers alter the constitution of essential oil blends, even those that diffuse them into the air through a fan will break down the molecular cohesion of the different combinations in the blend. And so first of all, to respond to your first question, the heart is probably the best place to put it. But you can put it on any one of your chakra centers that you feel needs the most healing, because Christ Scent will bring power from the spiritual world and the world of your soul into strengthen whatever part of your person needs a little more encouragement, a little more faith, a little more strength. But I would highly recommend that all of you use it somewhere on your person for the blessing. It's an incredible assistance to your senses recognizing the presence of Christ in the blessing. And then I'll take one, maybe 30 seconds longer, because we do have to move into our blessing, to tell you about our new, well, it's kind of a diffuser, but it's the best ever. The best, nothing even comes close to it. And it was a discovery that I made late last fall. It is the Himalayan large crystals salts. These salts are over 200 million years old, hand-mined from the high Himalayas, free of all modern contamination. And you can just imagine the purity of our planet at the time these salts were deposited. They're pink, they're gorgeous. And because salt is alkaline, you see, it's the acidity in all the various conveyors that breaks down the molecular cohesion in the oil. Because the salt is alkaline instead of acidic, it does not break down the perfect cohesion of any of the blends. It actually magnifies all of the fragrance. And a jar of the Himalayan salt crystals, we're offering in an apothecary jar filled with the crystals, and a jar, I mean, 1/6 ounce of Christ Scent will completely saturate that salt. And we've got this cute little lid that goes on it, so when you're not needing to smell it, it doesn't evaporate and go away. That way it can last for months and months and months. And then when eventually all essential oils do disappear because they're volatile. But you just add more Christ Scent to your same salt. The salt never goes away. And internally, it still retains the imprint of the Christ Scent, and the salt actually changes its patterns to conform to the Christ Scent. And the more you put on it, the more transparent. It becomes translucent and then transparent. You could add to this for 40 years, pass it on to your grandkids. I mean, it could become literally a sacred heirloom. and just open the jar where you are when you receive the blessing or any time. Keep it by your desk. If you're ever under stress, just open the lid, let it waft around you, and it's like the presence of Christ fills your being. I am so excited about this. I think it's the most wonderful compliment to the sacred essential oils that has appeared in 10 years, and I have to tell you, it took me a few days to realize the significance of this. When it all came together, the day it all came together, I got my first ingredients, proved that it worked, and got all the facts, was November the 23rd. That's how recent it is. We're talking recent. And guess what November the 23rd is? It's the 20th anniversary of Yeshua's first appearance to me as the light. And to me, this represents the perfection, the Alpha and the Omega, something 200 million years old, combining with something that is life-giving and alive today, offering the continued, never-ending blessing. So I haven't written the whole story of how all of this came together, but just trust me, you will love it. And if you already have your Christ Scent, you can just buy the little salt apothecary just by itself. If you have any of the other essential oils, just get the salt apothecary. Put your oils in it. Only one per jar, though, because you may be mixing fragrances that don't easily blend. Anyway, we do need to get on to our blessing, but thank you, Cecilia, for bringing that up.
Glenda, thank you so much.
Yes? You're still on.
Oh, I just wanted to tell you, I was looking around for a place to sit down to receive the blessing on the beach, and someone had written in rocks, I love you. And I just felt like that was a message from Yeshua to share with everybody. I love
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you can receive the blessing for all of us on the beach. And I'm sure there's someone in every climate location who can receive the blessing for all of us around the world. And thanks for our blessing givers also who may want to join this call. Now we really, really do have to get on with our blessing. And I'm going to mute everyone so that we have no background noise at all. And shoes and socks off. I know, Celia, that will be a delight for you, being there on the beach. If you're in North Country and it's not easy to remove your socks, try to have some natural fiber on so that these artificial fibers don't interfere with connection to the earth. Because we're going to connect with the earth, we're going to connect with the cosmos, we're going to connect with the presence of God within our own self, our higher self in our heart, and with Yeshua in our heart. And through this mighty, unbroken connection, we're going to unite with one another in this season of sharing, this season of community, this season of warm, open, giving, sharing hearts. And I offer you my personal love, but now I surrender into being a conduit for Yeshua. I will pray to him. You may pray for the 3 minutes that you are in the conduction and feeling the conduction of the blessing. Whatever is in your heart, let that be your prayer. And then go and rest and assimilate for 7 minutes. Don't think, just assimilate. Let it filter into every cell of your body. And we especially ask this for those who are hurting and those who ask for physical blessing or need physical blessing. Be sure to take that rest time and allow the energy to assimilate and form its perfect pattern in the cells of your body, in the DNA, and all of the systems of your body. Yeshua, thank you for being with us, for allowing us to know that we were indeed created in the image of God. We're simply on a discovery to have an experience, to bring back to God the harvest of all that's been created and the harvest of all that's possible. Sometimes what we harvest is not pleasant. Sometimes it's curiosity we don't understand. And sometimes it's simply magnificent. But all is a harvest to God, and we know that we are loved for bringing that harvest into our heart and for forgiving where forgiveness is required, for rejoicing where rejoicing is appropriate. We thank you for being with us, for walking with us on every path, and for today being with us to conduct the energy of the Holy Spirit through our body, heart, soul, spirit, and being, touching the earth in her ancientness and her purity, that our mother may reunite with us as well. Amen. The energy conduction is complete. Now go and rest. Be with God. Be with all that has been given to you as a blessing and as a gift. I send my love to you and wish you to be in the love of God.